The following is a North Carolina Baptist resource. For more, visit ncbaptist.org.
The convention started this immigration ministry back in 2015. Dr. Phillips and some others have the vision of, you know, we need to do something. I was working at the time with Hispanic church planting, and we have a lot of planters that will come from Latin America. I have no papers. They were undocumented. They came in as children or young age. They accepted the Lord. They were believers, strong believers. Now they want to serve as pastors and have no papers. So they will come and say, can you help us get the documentation or papers that we need? And our usual answer was, well, really, we don't get into that aspect. We don't work with that. And it really created some tension with some of the planters that thought that we weren't interested or didn't care about them enough. So the leadership of the convention said, 2015 passed a resolution. We need to affirm the dignity of every human being, and we need to do whatever we can do. We won't become political activists. We are not going to go to Washington or march on the streets, but we can certainly stand in the name of Jesus, a helping hand to those that have a path to correct or fix their immigration situation. So that's where we partner here with CIR Rally and some other institutions to help us accomplish that. Our vision right now is to help establish centers across the state where churches can refer people, and ideally churches to open these centers of immigration centers. It's a very fluid vision. What I mean by that, we don't have to do it this way. But we are open to explore possibilities with director of missions and with pastors of local churches where they can say, okay, we are going to partner in a region. We just opened a center in Lincolnton. Four or five churches coming together. One is the flagship, but the others are coming in. And we are providing English as a second language and some other resources for the community. Our ultimate goal, let's make that clear, is to obviously communicate the gospel and to make disciples. But at the same time, we want to show the love of Christ in the small actions. It's something that I'm preaching to the choir here. You guys wouldn't be here if you didn't have that heart already. But sometimes we just limit ourselves to present the gospel, right? And we think we have done what we can do, let the law do the rest. But Jesus went around Palestine healing all kinds of illness. Why would he do that? He should have limited himself to just preach the gospel. But he showed compassion. And people would come from morning to evening and make holes in the roof and bring the sick. And he would feed people. What for? Why even raise Lazarus? He was going to die anyway. He was better in heaven, but he still cried and he showed compassion. And I think as believers, we have swing. I grew up Catholic. It's all about work, right? Good work, good deeds. And then as a Christian, we have gone to the other end and say, I don't need work to be safe and saved by grace. And so kind of neglect a little bit the good work that we were created in Jesus to do, right? That's Ephesians 2:10. But you all know that. So the convention then, I have come with the vision, we are going to help start these centers where they are not necessarily depending on the convention. We are going to help them get them off the ground. We are going to provide counseling. And if they want to work with us in partnership, perpetually, great. If they want to go on their own, that's great too, but the community needs to know that we as Christians, we love them and we care about them. So we are going to have a very tight schedule, but we hope to have time for questions and answers. I will turn it to either Larry now.
What we want to do this afternoon is try to answer a question for you basically. You know, if you're interested in immigration services and engaging immigrants around the issue of documentation and legal status, then that's what we want to try to do this afternoon, is to give you a quick snapshot of how your church can become involved in it. So we have Baptist Immigration Services that we're operating with now in North Carolina. We're the first SBC convention in the United States, of course, that has immigration services at the level that we have it. I'm accredited now with DOJ. Antonio is finishing up his accreditation John is accredited with the Department of Justice. And what has happened, DOJ realized that immigrants were not having access to legal services that they needed to have access to. And so they started a program that gives recognition and accreditation to nonprofits who want to work in the area of immigration law. None of us are immigration attorneys, but we are accredited with the Department of Justice to offer legal services and to deal with immigrants on all levels. So there's an accreditation, a partial accreditation, full accreditation. We'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. But that's the whole gist. And Baptist Immigration Services, we're operating on a lot of different levels. One of the levels is around the area of education. So we want to talk with North American churches about immigration issues. Dr. Chuck Register had a conference earlier this morning, I guess it was this afternoon, around immigration being a gospel issue. So we'd like to go into North American English-speaking churches and talk about the biblical basis for engagement of immigrants on whatever level. So that's an educational piece for us. Another educational piece for us has to do with going into the immigrant congregations and helping them understand the biblical and theological perspective around immigration, because they also don't understand what the Bible has to say. What the Bible has to say about immigration in reference to who they are and what they're engaged in. So we do an educational piece also with the immigrant church. And then the third piece is we actually offer immigration services. So we're able to represent immigrants before the Department of Homeland Security and also in the immigration courts. So that's important. So the same service that they get from an immigration attorney, we're able to offer. So we fill out the same forms, we can give the same counsel to them, and they can have the same representation. The vision for us in North Carolina is that we want to, as Antonio mentioned, do some things around immigration centers, but they don't have to be necessarily immigration centers. We want to do services and ministries to immigrants of which immigration is going to be a component. Some of the things that we will open, some of the places we will open, will be immigration centers, and they will concentrate just on the immigration issue. There may be some other centers that will have various ministries that they will operate in. English as a second language, citizenship classes, after-school tutoring for immigrant children, job fairs, client services. There are a lot of things that these centers can do. Our concentration has to do around the immigration piece. So the first question is, how do we get these centers accredited? What do you do? If your church had an interest, what would be one of the first steps that you would have to do as far as accreditation? How would you get recognition and accreditation with the Department of Justice? There are two basic things that have to take place. For every center we open, that center has to have recognition from the Department of Justice. So it can be a 501c3. Most of you, perhaps your churches are already with a 501c3. If you do not have a 501c3 in a church, if you're affiliated with the Baptist State Convention of North Carolina, you can use our 501c3. So that gives you a qualification for that. And so the center has to meet certain criteria of services that they offer to the community, be a 501c3, have to present a budget, you have to outline sort of your program services, and that has to be submitted into the Department of Justice. The second phase is that every center that is accredited also has to have, that's recognized, has to have a representative that's accredited. So the individual, each center has to have at least one person that has accreditation with the Department of Justice. So you can't have a center without an accredited representative, and the accredited representative can't work without a center that's recognized. So even though I'm accredited for one center, or if we have satellite centers, I have an extension of those centers. But you have to meet both of those requirements. So you've got to have a recognized center, and you have to have an accredited representative. Okay? So it's fairly easy getting the center recognized. The difficult part is for the accredited representative. So what does the accredited representative have to do? So this is things that you would have to do to fulfill that accreditation process. One is that you have to take a 40-hour law course offered by an accredited agent endorsed by the Department of Justice. Now, World Relief offers those classes. Catholic Legal Services offer those classes. Immigrant Hope is another agency that offers those classes. And CIR in Raleigh headed up classes through the Law Department of Campbell University a few years ago that actually sponsored those training hours. So it's 40 hours of training, and you do that over the course of 1 week, 5 days, 8 hours a day to get you those 40 hours. That's one way of getting your 40 hours. Now, you can do it with Catholic Legal Services also offers a course online. It takes about 6 weeks, 6 hours a week online class that will also give you those 40 hours that you need in immigration law. The cost of that is approximately $450 for the course, and then somewhere between $500 and $600 for the law books. You have to have a basic law library, and that's going to cost you $600 just off of the top. Your center will not receive recognition unless you have some basic law library, and those basic books will be roughly $600. John will talk a little bit later about how we partner with them that will also give you access to law library information and books and resources that would also qualify for your center. After you take the 40 hours, then you actually go through an exam. It's an open book exam. It's about 40 questions, and all the questions have to do with particular immigration cases. You have approximately 2 weeks to take the exam. And when I turned my exam in, it was like 36 typed pages for the responses, because you have to study the cases. You have to write your findings and conclusions based upon your law research. And it took me about 26 hours.
Do what?
Open book.
And it's open book. Yeah, it's open book. So once you take the 40 hours, you pass the test, then you have to do shadowing with an accredited representative or an immigration attorney. And that shadowing is somewhere between 70 to 100 hours that you're required to shadow. You could shadow with me. You could do your shadowing with John. We can put you in touch with immigration attorneys that work with us. And I did my shadowing in the immigration attorney's office in Greensboro and down in Charlotte. So once you take the class, pass the exam, do the shadowing, then we would submit the application for recognition of a center or along with your accreditation process. So that's sort of the big picture of how we move through the process. John will explain some examples of how that works out, whether you do it independently on your own, or we set you up as an affiliate site through CIR if you use your own 501c3 or if you decide to use the 501c3 of the convention. But all I wanted to talk about was the accreditation process. So that's the big picture about the accreditation process. You know, if an old man can do this, you guys can do it. You know, my instructor, when we were going through it, he said, you know, you've been out of college a long time, haven't you? Yeah, it's been a while. This year is 50 years. I have my 50-year anniversary Furman coming up in May of this year. And said, you know, usually people who are just recently out of school do a lot better with this type of exam than these old folks do. But I passed. So we encourage you to look at the possibility. We'll have time for some questions and answers, but let's get the whole picture out there for you to see, and then we'll deal with some more of the concepts. Is that okay?
Before I talk about exactly the nuts and bolts of that, I want to walk you how to get to where
our page is. That is CIRNC.org, although you see CIRaleigh.org. That's an old website, but CIRNC will get you there. And once you go there, if you look at services and programs, then you'll see Baptist Immigration Services right there. And if you click on Baptist Immigration Services, it'll take you here to this page. He already mentioned that we have one center, and you can see in the picture there, Immigrant Hospitality Center. It's over in Lincolnton. That center is in the process of being recognized by the Department of Justice. And then Bobby Farmer, some of you may or may not know him, he's going to be sort of directing the immigration services there, at least from that perspective. And then right down here where it says Immigration Resources, this Church Leaders Guide, this sort of gives you a biblical overview of why you would want to do immigration services in your church. It also, it's from World Relief. It also goes into some of the same things that Larry just shared. Some of the stuff that Larry just shared, and I'd encourage you to take a look at that. And then the part that I'm going to talk about is the nuts and bolts a little bit right here, and that's a toolkit from the Catholic Legal Immigration Network. And this toolkit is like this is the premier one that people use to get themselves to get their centers accredited and represented. Recognized. And so I just wanted to point those resources out to you. And I guess there was one more thing I wanted to show you on the website. If we might get a chance to talk about it. But some people are interested in direct ministry right now. I'm really excited about this. I just got back from Mexico, and I'm going back again next month. But this is Border Refugee Ministry. You can take a look at this. It's constantly being updated. We just got back from Mexico and dealt with these three ministries right here. Those are direct contacts with them if somebody wants to get involved. C.R. Fuentes tomorrow will be coming online. I don't think I have him here yet. And then we're going to be working with Chiapas, Mexico, which is the southern border of side of Mexico where the people are coming up from Central America. And so look for those resources. So Larry was talking a little bit about how to get certified or recognized as a center, and he said that's the easy part. I have to disagree with him. I'm in the process of recertifying recognizing our centers, and it's long and involved. But there's been a lot of questions that churches and individuals have. Okay, well, you know, legal services, what about the liabilities, and what about this and that and the other? And so sometimes that's the biggest cog in the wheel, is getting people to get the deacons on board and the people on board to vote and to have this new kind of ministry in their church, and then what are the liabilities and this and that and the other. So we've developed two models through which a church or a group of churches, that's actually our preference, a group of churches, can get involved. And before I talk about those two models, I want to say why I said a group of churches. This issue is really a big issue. We have worked with some larger churches in North Carolina and talked with them about the issue. And when they start digging down in the weeds and realizing, looking at this issue, they realize, you know what, this is bigger than one church. It really is a big issue to deal with, and it takes it takes a lot to get involved with. And we think that for the gospel's sake, we think multi churches should get together. We love the idea. The one we have working with in Lincolnton has American, I call them gringo churches, Latino churches, and some Asians that have come together. And when we were at the opening of that, I just looked around, and the diversity of people there that were there supporting that ministry was just, it brought tears to my eyes. You know, and we know in Revelations where it says every tribe and every tongue and every nation. And obviously we didn't see that sitting there, but as I looked out, a lot of times when I go to churches, as we probably are all aware, we see a sea of gray and a sea of white. And it's just a few dots. Sometimes there's a few dots of color. But in that opening, it was just so exciting to see people. We had lawyers. We had doctors. We had people from the government. We had field workers. We had people from all over the world there at the opening of that center. And I thought, wow, this is what we need to be doing. And so that's, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that to see. We'd love to see churches come together around this issue. And a lot of times, since this is not something that any churches generally have expertise in, people sort of like to coalesce around together and work together and borrow from over here and borrow from over here. And so that's why we really encourage that. But the two models that we look at, as Larry mentioned, one of the models is a nonprofit, a 501c3. It doesn't have to be a church, but it can be a church. Can apply with the Department of Justice to demonstrate that they have the the budget and the resources and the legal library and other things available, and that there's a need in the community to sort of become recognized with the Department of Justice. And that's a process, that toolkit that's up there would sort of, if you want to get an idea exactly what those steps look like, the toolkit will help you with that. But about 3 years ago, the Department of Justice also realized that that was such an onerous process for some people that there was a need, because a lot of people like we have just opened the center in Lincolnton, and having to go through all that processing to start open that center, and then we had to take, he and I are certified or recognized at our center in Raleigh, then we'd have to go over to this center and get recognized in this center so we could operate in this center as well as this center. So they said, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll use sort of a franchise model, and you can franchise what you're doing at your headquarters and do it in another place. And then all your representatives that are associated with that organization then can practice immigration law across the whole center. Did you have a question? And so this is one of the models that we're using, and it's also the one that allows us to get up and started the quickest, because it takes a while to get recognition with the Department of Justice. So we can get a center together, we can organize it, and then we can submit for recognition. And then all the people that are already certified or accredited within our network then can operate in that center. So we can, Larry is over in Hickory, but the center we opened is in Lincolnton. And so as soon as that recognition happens, then Larry or I, and soon enough Amari, will be able to practice in that center. We don't actually have to be accredited in that center. And so we can get a center up and going even before we get a representative that is accredited. And so that's one of the models. And of course, the other model is to go all the way and start something from the ground up and be your own standalone center, and even at some point maybe start franchising from that. So we're encouraging church to take a look at this. And I think sometimes the elephant in the room with a lot of people is, well, are you helping undocumented people? In fact, that's one of the questions we get asked very often. We're not sure we want to help undocumented people. And there's a lot of ways I'd like to respond to that. But one of them is, we're practicing immigration law. So we're not helping people continue in their undocumented status. We are helping them to become documented. So yes, to answer your question, we do work with undocumented people for the very purpose of helping them comply with the law. And so that's sometimes a big hurdle for people to get over. The other question is, I know in the center in Lincolnton, we're going to be doing English classes, or they're going to be doing English classes and citizenship classes. And one of the questions is, well, are you going to offer English classes to undocumented people? I would like to ask, do you go to the Mexican Rescue and serve by undocumented people? I mean, I don't ask, do you? I take the services. And likewise, if somebody wants to learn to speak English, which is something that would benefit them and benefit us, and we can use our gospel influence and our gospel love to teach them to speak English, well, of course, we're going to do that. And so that's some of the steps it takes to do that. And I think Larry mentioned, I was trying to figure out with the computer over there, that these centers are not only about immigration. In fact, you can do one that's all you do is immigration. But we want to see them do other things, ESL, citizenship classes. Some places are going to want to do closed closets and that kind of thing. And I think that's something we'd like to see happen. Now I want to move just a little bit and talk about some of the outlays it takes to have a center, some very basic things. One of the things is with churches, it's really exciting, is most of the infrastructure is already there. You need a desk, you need a private office, you need a computer, you need a copy machine, you need access to the internet, and you need probably a waiting room for somebody to, because you can't, this is private, this is legal counsel. In fact, that was brought up in one of our meetings. Well, are you going to communicate, or are you going to participate with ICE? Well, to the degree that we have attorney-client privilege, if ICE wants to bring us a subpoena from a judge, well, we have to obey that. But otherwise, we have attorney-client privilege. Uh-huh.
But to tie that point with the previous one, why would a church get involved with illegal immigrants and something so controversial that will divide my church or bring me trouble as a pastor? Why not just preach the gospel and steer clear from this whole thing of centers and stuff, but just going to bring me controversy to my church? Why would I get involved in this issue?
I think that's the same question. And we didn't plant that question, though. That's the same question I have heard in the scriptures. You might remember one time Jesus was at a party, and a lady came and began to wash his feet with her hair. And what did they say to him? Don't you know that's an undocumented woman? No, they didn't say that. Don't you know that's a woman of ill repute? Doesn't he know that? And Jesus' response was basically, check your hearts, guys. I mean, we learned in the last session, Acts 17, God marked out the places that people should live and the seasons in which they live them. Now, I'm not going to stand up here and say God is the author of undocumented immigration. I'm not going to say that. But I'm going to say God is sovereign, and he has permitted things for a reason. And I'm not sure that God... I won't go there. God has allowed things to happen for a reason. I wish you hadn't got me off on this because it really gets me going. I was just recently in Mexico last week. And I don't know if you ever thought about this, but the refugees that are accumulating at the border, where we're talking about the border wall, have you thought about that those are foreigners to Mexico? So, and here's, I work with immigrants and I work with Latinos, and I speak Spanish, so this should have been a no-duh thing, but it wasn't. I was in Piedras Negras, which is on the right across the border from Eagle Pass, which is like the hot spot right now. That's where all the police cars are lined up along the border. You probably saw that on the news. I got pictures of it. It was exciting. Anyways, I was in Piedras Negras, and there's a big refugee center where people from all over the world, guys. It's not just Central America. I mean, they were from Angola. They were from China. They were all over the world in the refugee center, and guess what? There were Mexicans out there with placards shouting and screaming, they're taking our jobs. Why are you helping them and not helping us? There's poor people in Mexico. And I was like, wait a minute, I've heard this somewhere. But here's the funny thing, or not funny thing, the exciting thing to me, God is doing something different in the Mexican church. The Mexicans said, these are foreigners. Some of them speak Spanish, but they are totally different from us. What do we do with them? How do we treat them? And so we were able to go and share with them how God is working in different parts of Mexico. And they said, oh, we get it. God has brought these people here to strengthen our churches. God has brought some of these people here to meet him. I think we often think about that God is moving people to the United States so these heathens can get saved. But we forget probably 60 to 80% of the people coming from Central America are our brothers and sisters in Christ. They're not the heathens to be reached. They are being brought to enrich our churches. They have a perspective of the gospel that is a little different from our perspective, in the sense that they've grown up in persecution and they've learned to flourish in persecution. And that's something that you and I perhaps have not had the responsibility to do. So we could go on.
We have 10 minutes.
On and on with that.
I'm over, perhaps my answer is overly simplistic, but I told the pastor, we are here to do the right thing, not just the easy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And just as you said, with that woman, with the tax collectors, we are supposed to do things that are controversial. As long as we are doing it biblically, we're not breaking any law, that's what we are called to do. That's mm-hmm. what our churches have plateaued declining, because we have taken the easy route versus the what the Lord has called us to do. Sorry, I got you off track.
If it were not for immigrant churches in the United States, evangelicalism would not be plateaued. It would be in decline. Would not be plateaued, which is a bad sign in itself. It's not growing, it's a plateaued. But without the growth, without the immigrant churches, it would be in decline. God is doing something exciting. I think he's about to do something in the U.S., but using the Mexican churches. It's really exciting.
So basically what you're saying about your center.
Yeah, so do that.
Because I just want to tell you guys that my whole agenda today to what to do, it got COVID changed, but I like my mother. But just like you were talking about, we introduced the gospel. Mm-hmm. So whenever we invite somebody to church and we share the gospel, like, I don't know about you guys, but I just don't invite them to church and then they hear the preacher and then that's it. I don't leave them. I do follow up. I contact them. And a lot of times they don't come back and sometimes they do. But here's the thing. It's the same thing like bringing the undocumented ones in. That's like sharing the gospel with them. You're going to give them tools just like you would if that sinner, when that sinner keeps coming back to church, you're giving them tools how to get documented. So that just really blew my mind that people think that way, that you're helping undocumented. Well, how else are they going to get help to know how to be documented? Man, that's just, I got me excited.
So one of the things, and I want to say this real quickly, I've been a Christian, this sounds crazy, since I was 3 years old and I'm 48, so 45 years. And I went to Tijuana, Mexico 3 or 4 weeks ago. And to make a real long story short, a young lady passed in front of me that I had already had a little bit of a relationship with the day before. And I handed her a little piece of cupcake for breakfast. And when I did, she started crying. And you remember that passage in the Bible where it says, Jesus said, somebody touched me and he felt power go out of him? The lady with the issue of blood? I never understood that. I'm not Pentecostal. I don't know anything about this power stuff. Right? But when I handed the lady the little cupcake, something happened. There was a transaction there, a spiritual transaction. And I stood back and said, wait a minute, this is weird. I was raised Baptist. We don't do this kind of thing, right? But God brought something to my mind. When we do things in the name of Jesus, what does that mean? That's in His power and in His authority. And Jesus, the Holy Spirit at that moment, I don't know what He was doing in that lady's life, but He used that act of His authority and His power to do something in that lady's life that I probably will never know. That was ministering the gospel. Even though I wasn't the one allowed to voice the gospel to her. The Holy Spirit doesn't really need me, right? He chooses to use me. And whoever's going to give her the word, who already has given her the word, in that moment the gospel is being ministered. As I sit down with people and deal with their immigration issues, I pastored for 15 years. I've never, in those 15 years, had the opportunity to minister to people the gospel like I have as I've been practicing immigration law since 2013. Every day, the Holy Spirit uses the work that we do, and I see it in the lives of people. It is such an exciting thing.
You work with mainly new immigrants?
We work with them all. We got some that are coming. I got clients in South Africa that I'm working with that have never been here that are coming. I have some that have been, that are new immigrants that are applying. I have people that have been here for 20 years that we're working to help them figure out how to work their situation out.
That's what I wanted to know. The people that have been here a long time, and they're really getting scared that they're going to be sent out of the country.
Some of them, there's nothing we can do. Some of them. That's the thing. A lot of them don't know. So we sit down and go through a whole screening process and ask the right questions and discover. And I discovered somebody was a citizen. They didn't know it. I sat down with them. We were talking and going through it. And I said, wait a minute. What? And, yeah, you're a citizen. All we need to do is put this paperwork in and here's your citizenship. They thought they were undocumented all this time. So there's all kinds of issues.
If you know people that have been here for years, what could you tell them?
Well, they need to have a screening. And if they go to a lawyer's office, they're probably going to charge $150, $200 for a screening. We do charge. We charge $50 to do a screening. Most lawyers' offices are going to spend 15 minutes with you. We usually spend an hour going through the process, and then we'll say, well, the next step for you, most of the time, they don't know the right answers. We have to get a record from immigration to see what is the reality about your situation. So it's a complicated process for some people.
They slipped over the border years ago. They don't have any proof of how long they've been here.
But immigration does. Usually they have something. Not always, but usually.
What about the alien seeking refuge? Asylum.
Yeah, now asylum is another issue very, very close to my heart. Asylum is very, very complicated. Some people say it's the most complicated law we have in the United States. Currently in our organization, I'm the only one that can represent people defensively before immigration court for asylum. Some people that have been here for less than a year can apply affirmatively for asylum. So we screen for asylum and try to help people figure out if they should apply for their asylum claims. Most of them are not going to qualify because how narrow our asylum law is.
So what if they already have the Social Security card to work?
Well, that doesn't necessarily mean anything because years ago they gave Social Security cards to anybody that wanted to work, whether they were legal or not. Now that's not possible. They have the ITN number, individual taxpayer identification number. But some people have the Social Security card from years ago, but they're still not legally present in the United States.
Does their name go in a database? Because I think what happens with some of the people I know, they would be fearful if something didn't work and then they were targeted.
Yeah. So with us, we don't have any reporting requirements through the Department of Justice except for about our program, not about people. Now, we represent people for the Department of Justice, and they keep track of who we represent, but they keep track of everybody that puts paperwork. In other words, if I put paperwork in on somebody, I have to sign up as I'm their representative, and the DOJ knows that. But that's true with every single person that gets represented by an attorney.
So you can help them get the number?
The taxpayer identification, that's not something we do, but yes, I know how to do that.
ITIN.
Yeah, that's the W-7 that you fill out with the IRS.
I have other friends, I don't know. They have a lawyer, but they haven't ever gotten it.
Well, they can just fill out taxes and put 0000 in where it says Social Security number, and they'll get it back with an ITIN number. So if they fill out taxes and just put 000, they'll get an ITIN number. You know, we don't want... Technically, they're not legally supposed to be here, but we definitely want their tax money. So we'll figure out a way to get that.
So in terms of language proficiency, what are you guys?
Well, Bobby is not certain, doesn't speak any Spanish at all, so that's one of the ministries that people provide in some of the local churches, is they come and do some of the translating for him. But to practice immigration law, it has to be done in English. Everything has to be dealt with in English. But in terms of collecting data from the immigrant, then that's one of the things that of course, Larry speaks Spanish. Amari does okay with his Spanish. I speak Spanish, but Bobby, on the other hand, so it's not an impediment, or it's not a disqualifier. Let's put it that way. And plus, if you think about it, we don't just treat Latinos. I mean, I have clients from all over the world, and I don't speak any language. I mean, I speak English and Spanish, and that's it. So.
What if I'm not sure that I want to take all that training for immigration, but I want to volunteer or serve in one of those centers as an input for information or welcoming people, a clerk, secretary? Can I do that without all that legal training?
Yes. One of the things that I have people do is we have a short immigration law. If you're going to help in the immigration clinics, you can take an hour and a half immigration training that you can sort of get an overview of that, and then there's a lot of things to do other than sit and study law books. Ask Larry. He and I just worked on a stack of papers. Was that tall, Larry? For one religious worker's visa. So there's a lot more to do than reading law books. Trust me.
All right. We have 3 minutes. What other questions do you have that will help you move forward?
I have a question. How do you have a difficult time getting people to trust you? Like to actually come to you?
The word of mouth gets out, and it would be if we were just putting a sign out saying immigration law, but like in Lincolnton, the churches that are involved are well known in the community, and there's what, 3 or 4 Latino churches that are involved, so that will, you know, over time, the word of mouth does that, but yeah, there's a lot of fear.
What is the closest one?
To, probably, is Lincolnton closer or Raleigh? We got one in Raleigh and one in Lincolnton.
And we have one in Hickory.
Yes.
The service industry is in such a need for help that nobody is running them out of the country. And so the pressure is not the same.
We're open to go anywhere where there's interest. And you don't have to have a heavy, large caseload. If you service 12 immigrants through the year, that would be meaningful.
We have hundreds.
Yeah. And so.
We don't have thousands.
Yes. We'll go for the ones and twos.
What kind of financial commitment would that be for the church? Anybody's interested in doing this? I mean,
so that most of the stuff is already in the church. It's the infrastructure, it's an office, as I mentioned. So the financial commitment is getting somebody certified, and then we think that somebody ought to be paid to do the services. I don't think this is something that ought to be done ad hoc. So that's the two costs probably.
Yeah, and initially we could even do strategic partnerships through the convention to help get some of these clinics started. So when we're talking about paying someone's salary, you may be looking at $15 an hour range. We can project that out through associational and strategic partnership agreements with the convention. That's how we're funding this clinic initially in Lincolnton. When we have more of a client base in Lincolnton, the income from those clients will cover our cost for that person. And then we're going to base a lot of our ministry upon volunteers coming in. So the initial outlay is $1,000 to get someone accredited. Submitted a strategic partnership with the convention to get us our first operating year expenses. Find partners in that area, other churches, businessmen. We have businessmen that's underwriting 2 years of rental. We have a Main Street office building in Lincolnton, and the convention putting in $0 for the first 2 years because we have businessmen who decided this is a ministry that they would support. So we try to do a lot of partnering with a lot of other people.
Are you taking the plate? I mean, do they have, you can take, do what a lawyer would do?
We do absolutely everything that a lawyer
does. Exactly.
So if I know people that can't afford a lawyer, that okay.
Yes.
You're licensed to practice law.
Immigration law.
Immigration only.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly. It's called administrative law. We can practice within the DHS and Executive Office for Immigration Review. We can't practice any other type of law. And we're not considered lawyers. We're clearly not lawyers. We're DOJ accredited reps.
Would you still be a representative as a servant of the court? Do they recognize that?
In immigration court,
yes.
But not in North Carolina courts. But yes, we are an officer of the court.
That's a federal court.
It is. It sure is. And if you want to read a little bit more about it, that's one reason I brought this. There's the Immigration Center. It talks a little bit about it. A trip that I recently did to Mexico that Liz reported on. And then, so we wanted you to have that resource to be able to.
All right. We're going to break. It's time. Thank you so much for being here.